This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Calls to overturn the 2020 election in Wisconsin reemerge after Donald Trump puts pressure on Republicans, a move that legal experts say is impossible. Plus, state election officials can't agree on what to tell clerks after a court banned absentee ballot drop boxes. And who's leading the pack in the latest fundraising numbers? We have what campaigns are reporting. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 15th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., another busy week in Wisconsin politics. We're first going to start with the renewed calls for decertification after former President Donald Trump over the weekend posted on his social media platform, basically calling on Republicans. Well, now that the state Supreme Court ruled that drop boxes are illegal, those ballots that were cast via absentee ballot through the drop boxes, he believes and claims that those shouldn't count. So this kind of renewed calls for State Representative Tim Rantham, who has always been behind the effort and a resolution to overturn the 2020 election results. He kind of renewed those calls, said he kind of changed his resolution a little bit and kind of said exactly kind of what Trump said, that those absentee ballots that were put in the mail, you know, even though if they were voters voting for him, those should not count. Therefore, they should revoke Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes. J.R., as we know, there's been legal scholars, top Republicans, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, all of them have said there is no pathway to decertification. But of course, they do still have questions about the 2020 election and concerns. Let's first just hear from State Representative Tim Rantham, who of course is also a candidate running as a Republican in the governor's race, basically saying he's not a conspiracy theorist. He believes this has some weight to it. Let's take a listen.
My focus has been since day one, transparency and truth. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am not. How can you ignore this when you're supposed to be serving the public and not try to do something about it? That's what I've embraced. The lie is the fact that you haven't accepted the fact that something wrong happened. That's where the problem is. I want to be able to move on and know that when I go to vote in April or in spring or in fall, that I can trust that my ballot counted properly and that I wasn't disenfranchised. Because when you let stuff come in the back door, nefarious and otherwise, it mitigates the effect of the true citizen and what they really want. And so as a people, we don't ultimately elect our representatives. They're selected. And I don't want selected versus elected.
So we know Speaker Voss is not interested in going this route. Of course, he believes there's widespread fraud and all of that. So basically him saying, we're not going to come back in a special session, Representative Rantham, to take up your resolution. It kind of ignited President Trump to target Robin Voss all over again. He issued a new statement later in the week, basically saying, what a waste of brilliant and courageous, or excuse me, that was Speaker Voss's.
Yep, that's from Trump, yes.
Oh, that's from Trump. Excuse me. I'm out of order. Sorry, guys. We just added these in. This is from Donald Trump, who posted on his social media. It said, what a waste of a brilliant and courageous decision by the state's high court. The Democrats would like to sincerely thank Robin Voss and his fellow rhinos for letting them get away with, quote, murder, a rigged and stolen election. Then Voss, of course, yesterday responded to that, saying, I agree that the state Supreme Court ruling ballot drop boxes are illegal was courageous, but as he has said, as we have mentioned, legal scholars say there is no pathway to overturn the election. He is more focused on reelecting a Republican governor, so Governor Evers can't veto all of those election bills that Republicans pass that they call will reform the election system. So, J.R., this is once again putting Robin Voss a lot of pressure on him, but he's kind of standing his ground here saying, we're not going to do this, but let's just focus our energy heading towards the polls this August and November.
So, remember the decision of the Supreme Court from a week ago doesn't mention 2020 in terms of a single ballot cast. It doesn't talk about 2020. It talks about going forward. At the circuit court level, all the oral arguments, all the briefs that I read, they did not talk about invalidating ballots from 2020. Talk about going forward, whether drop boxes are illegal. The Supreme Court says they are. However, it does not mean anything about 2020 was amiss, right? It doesn't impact 2020, I should say. It just means going forward, you can't use an unmanned drop box in Wisconsin, collect absentee ballots. So there is no basis, as far as I can tell, not being a lawyer, to go back and make that decision retroactive. It wasn't asked for by the plaintiffs to make it retroactive to 2020. That's not in the cards. Two, with Robin Voss, underscores we've talked about for a long time. No matter what he does with Donald Trump, unless he does everything Trump wants, he was going to get chided. This is not the first time Trump has pressured Robin Voss. Remember, last summer before the GOP state convention, he accused Voss, Lemahieu, and Kapinga of hiding fraud in Wisconsin. Not long after, Robin announced the state GOP convention, the hiring of Michael Gabelin for this review that was supposed to be done by, I believe, last fall, mm-hmm. and it's still ongoing. This spring, there was a question about whether Gabelin's contract would be extended beyond, you know, April, I think it was. Trump put another statement, like, you know, chiding Robin Voss, that not by name, but saying basically if any Republican doesn't back extending this investigation, they will get a primary challenge. So, again, this just shows you for Robin that he is in an open situation where no matter what he does, Voss or Trump is going to want more. And more is not to be had. Now, interesting with Rantham, he said, so he did the news conference, and then you circulate for support your various resolutions, bills, everything else. In these emails to lawmakers, it gives a little background and argument for it sometimes. Rantham included a note he's going to have a news conference on July 25th, I think, that Monday, to account for support for this. In other words, he's going to pressure Republicans to support this. If you don't support it, what's he going to do? There is a primary, August 9th. There are, I believe, 9 lawmakers, incumbent Republicans who face primary challenges. What are they going to do? If they don't get on board, will he then, you know, urge Republican voters not to vote for those guys in the August 9th election? Robin Voss has a primary challenge. What's Trump going to do now? Is Trump going to go out there and, you know, advocate for Adam Steen?
Who
saying
knows?
He will,
yeah.
But Trump's wrath has no restraint if you don't go where he wants. What's he going to do next? That's the wild card for Republicans. All this stuff is what would Trump do if you don't make him happy?
Right, and Trump's preferred candidate, he endorsed Tim Michaels, a mm-hmm. Republican in the governor's race. And he also this week told an ABC station, WKOW TV in Madison, that he's not ruling out decertification. So he is also, he said he wants to see the legislation mm-hmm. to do that, but he's still dancing around that fine line of not really committing, like where Robin Voss is saying, guys, just admit it already, right? We can't go that way. This kind of goes on to our next topic, where Tony Evers, candidate Tony Evers, has said he had a campaign event in Madison, and he slammed the Republican candidates, that challengers, I guess, that he could be facing. We'll know who he will go up against in the fall after August 9th. But basically saying, you know, hey, we need to put this to rest. And he had some strong words for those who are continuing the election investigation, and overall just not being more outspoken that there is no way to overturn the 2020 election. Let's first take a listen to what Evers had to say.
Well, they'll probably investigate it till they're 6 feet under. That's what they get their kicks out of. I believe they will continue doing this until Donald Trump is 6 feet under. So we fully anticipate that. This is Donald Trump pushing this issue. We have to also think about if Tim Michaels becomes governor of the state of Wisconsin, what will the next election look like? I firmly believe what you'll see if a Republican ends up as governor of the state of Wisconsin, which they won't, is that we will see elections change to the point where the legislature makes the final decision, and that should scare the living crap out of everybody in this room.
So I reached out to Clayfish and Tim Michaels, who Evers kind of directly addressing there, and Republicans overall, continuing Michael Gabelman's investigation. Clayfish said in a statement, Tony Evers' attitude towards election integrity, exactly why so many voters have many doubts. When I'm governor, I will restore faith in elections by passing those election integrity bills that we have talked about before to make it harder to cheat. So, I mean, you know, they kind of had a little sparring. They also sparred over some abortion policies. Of course, all Republican candidates do not want to have any exceptions for rape or incest going forward if new legislation were to emerge next session. And Evers is really just making this a centerpiece, abortion and defending election integrity, or defending elections, I should say, policies in his campaign.
Yeah, well, the abortion issue, as we talked, that's a motivator for the base, try to keep them engaged. The election issue is also one of her both bases. When Rebecca Clayfish says she wants to restore confidence in elections, she's talking about confidence among Republicans. Look at the Marquette poll. Democrats have confidence election results. Now, if the thing had been reversed and Trump had won, maybe those numbers would be different. We have kind of a sense to back whoever our our candidate is, and if he or she wins, then it was a correct result. We believe in those. That said, all the Republicans talk about when they say we want to restore faith in elections, they're talking about their base. Democrats are not an issue. Independents aren't an issue. It is their base that has this issue. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah, and Republicans also have long said that they want to overhaul, at least the candidates want to overhaul the Wisconsin State Elections Commission, ban private grant money, which is also they call Zuckerbucks. Speaking of WEC, they also met earlier this week. And they basically, I mean, no surprise here, JR, there's three Republicans, three Democratic commissioners on it. They were split on issuing guidance to clerks right now about what to do when it comes to questions after the state Supreme Court ruling that banned, or I should say, a voter has to return their absentee ballot either through the mail or at their local clerk's office. There's this big lingering question right now is if I can go and collect absentee ballots mm-hmm. in my neighborhood and put them in the mail for others. And this is a big issue for Disability Rights Wisconsin, who was named on that lawsuit, and they have long argued that federal law protects them, that basically allows them for a caregiver or a family member to take their ballot and put it in the mail. So that's kind of the main big question here right now. Let's first kind of just listen to a Democratic commissioner, Republican commissioner kind of arguing about they basically wanted to, Republicans wanted to solidify the court's order. Meanwhile, Democrats really just said that was only going to create more confusion if we make rules going forward. Here we go.
The question's going to be, is only the elector allowed to mail the particular ballot? And I think it's very clear that the state statutes say yes. It's only the elector. And, you know, who knows what somebody's going to do at midnight near a mailbox. But, I mean, at least we have our guidance out there. So all our 1,850 clerks, when they get this question, and undoubtedly they'll get it many times, will be able to answer it.
The court very specifically said they were not addressing what Commissioner Spindell claims is, quote, clear. So I don't think it's clear at all. The court specifically said it wasn't going to take it up. So I don't know how we take up what the Supreme Court didn't take up and somehow make a pronouncement of something that's clear. The idea of these sort of microscopic guidances based on laws we are just chatting about for the first time tonight, it's a terrible idea and doesn't actually provide assistance to our clerks.
So we'll kind of see what the State Election Commission ends up doing, if anything, on issuing guidance to clerks. But we're kind of, you know, running up against the clock. It's about less than 4 weeks away mm-hmm. is the August primary. Also, speaking of WEC, GOP leaders sent basically, I guess they ignited calls to not allow WEC give guidance to clerks to fill in empty absentee ballot envelopes. If you leave a blank, if you forget your address, if you forget to get a witness signature, this has been a long standing argument that Republicans say, hey, if that stuff's not filled out, a clerk shouldn't fill it in, and those ballots should not be cast. So this is something that we could see take hold in the Rules Committee next week.
Mm-hmm. So first, with the lack of guidance from the commission, basically during the hearing, they said, the Democrats said, we can't give guidance because there is confusion about what mm-hmm. this decision means. For example, if you read the footnotes in the decision, Ann Walsh Bradley raised the fact that the majority opinion talks about drop boxes, period. The original lawsuit talked about unmanned drop boxes. Why is that significant? Well, at oral arguments, Brian Hagedorn said, or raised a question, could you have a box in a clerk office that is within view of a clerk employee but not like somebody right on top of it and have absentee ballots dropped off there? They asked that question. The court didn't address it. Like you mentioned, court didn't address like whether you can still do what we call ballot harvesting, you know, collecting ballots put in the mail. It left unanswered the question of whether you can get help to get, you know, under state law, help putting your ballot in the mail. There are still lingering questions about what this means. So during the hearing, was interesting because Bob Spindell, Republican, he wanted to require voter ID to be shown to drop off your absentee ballot at mm-hmm. the clerk's, because the decision to make clear, you can drop off your ballot in person at the clerk's office, only you. And so Bob said we should require them to show that they are who they say they are. The Democrats said, whoa, whoa, whoa. The state Supreme Court just said a couple days ago, Elections Commission, you can only do what you're allowed in the law. You cannot create new requirements or new standards. There's no requirement in state law to require the showing of a state-issued ID or any kind of ID to drop off your absentee ballot. We would be violating the state Supreme Court's 4-day-old, 5-day-old ruling. We can't do that. Spindell argued, hey, they're clearly saying we want you to we want only the voter to drop off his or her ballot, this would be a way to do that. It's this gray area the Election Commission operates in all the time. You are empowered to regulate elections. What's that power mean? Can you create standards or just enforce what's in the law, black letter law, which goes to this new thing with curing absentee ballot envelopes. So, for example, if you're missing, like you said, zip code, city, address, by the way, under state law, it's not clear what qualifies as your address on absentee ballot envelope if you're the witness. So now, like my wife voted absentee just a few weeks ago. The envelope came with her pre-printed name, address, everything on it, so her stuff's all good. I had to fill in, you know, my name, address, and everything else. If I leave off the zip code, is that a problem? What if I only put down the street but not the number? It's not clear in state law what's there. So that stuff is what's been kind of filled in by clerks. Republicans argue the clerk shouldn't fill anything. They should contact the voter and say, you have a problem. You got to come fix it. So the commission in 2016 issued this first guidance saying, we want to allow clerks to, hey, clerks, you should go ahead and fill stuff in without contacting the voter first. Back earlier this year, JCRIR said, we want you to put that guidance in a rule, which then gives the committee oversight of it. The commission said, okay, we're going to vote 4-2 or rescind the guidance. The commission voted 4-2, a rare time as a bipartisan vote on anything uncontroversial, to move ahead with the process. That opened the door to the letter this week, which is Lemahieu, Voss, and I, August. Devin Lemahieu, Senate Majority Leader, Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, Tyler August, the Senate Speaker Pro Tem of the Assembly, to ask the co-chairs of the Joint Committee for Emergency Rules, we want you to convene and suspend this emergency rule. Because the rule process, the agency has to submit to the legislature, let's call it scope statement, the framework of this rule. They looked at the framework and said, this exceeds what's in the black letter law the commission can do. We want you to shut this down. Yeah. Now, the committee's going to meet sometime next week. Here's the rub. When the committee votes as we expect it to suspend this guidance, at some point it goes away. We are in the middle right now of voting for the August 9th primary.
Right.
You have the possibility of absentee ballots cast pre-committee action and post-committee action being treated differently by clerks. What's that going to mean? I have no clue.
I don't think we know.
I have never seen that before. But there's an inequity there. Will the committee address it? We don't know. We'll see when they meet next week what they're going to do. But this is a really interesting situation of Republicans want this gone. I think they're more concerned about getting it gone before the November election.
Correct.
Right? So the primary, one thing, but the November election is the big, they want this higher standard there. And again, the question we've raised before is, how much will people use absentee ballots to vote in November? Because we're kind of getting back to quote-unquote normal. In 2020, there were 2 million absentee ballots cast in Wisconsin. Almost 1.4 million were cast via the mail. What's the share going to be this time? I don't know. I'm going to be checking that like in the post-election reports to see whether we're still voting via absentee the way we were before, but it's going to be an interesting issue. And if it's a close election, this could be a deciding factor in it.
And we've also seen the state Supreme Court, when they make decisions too, they're like, well, this is going to come on the heels of election, maybe let's step back. But the chair of that committee is Senator Steve Noss, and he's very, to the point, wants to get this done. I don't think it matters. But will we see Republicans maybe say, maybe let's wait a few weeks to do this? Mm-hmm. And it's not on the calendar yet, but they're already said in the letter they have plans to maybe possibly come back next week. They usually follow through on their word. So that's just something we'll be keeping an eye on for sure. Also, about to nerd out here, JR, looking at the fundraising latest with many candidates. Some are still coming in, but we have, most of them that we've heard from so far. I'll spit up some of the numbers. And this is the first 6 months of what campaigns have raised. Governor Tony Evers, a little over $10 million during the first 6 months of 2022. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, a little over $7 million, and Rebecca Clayfish, a little over $3.6 million. We do have some other numbers that I know you'll get to, but this kind of just gives us a sense of how much they have spent so far and how much they might have on cash on hand, especially Republicans, who's going to advance in the governor's race.
So Evers, interesting note, so campaigns like to announce the big number but not give me the details, or us the details.
Yes.
So I'm always asking what the details are. So my math tells me that Evers spent $13 million in the first six months of the year. That's more than he took in. That's usually a red flag for a campaign. His campaign, though, said that a good chunk of that money was spent reserving TV ads. As a candidate, you get a better rate on TV ads than outside groups do. You also get a better rate as a candidate the earlier you book the ads. As you know, in TV, the closer you are to an election, the more they're filled up with ads. There's a supply and demand issue there. If you get your demand in early, you get a better rate, because come October, the rates are going to be through the roof and the people on your station make a whole lot of money. Johnson, that $7.1 million is for the second quarter. It's between his own campaign fund and his leadership, his joint fundraising operation. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen the full details yet to see like how that all played. Under federal law, Kent's going to have a joint fundraising agreement where they can join with other Republicans, other groups, like with Johnson, and raise money, and you can divide up those checks. You know, one check to cover donations to the candidate, to leadership group, and to other entities. So Johnson can only transfer from those checks this same amount he can for an individual donation to his campaign. So it's $2,900 for the primary, $2,900 for the general. But I don't know how much of this leadership money plays in $7.1 million. So I'll be geeking out this weekend looking at his reports. Clayfish, 3.6, which he touts as more than other challenges point in the cycle, which is true. But it's also less than half what Evers raised the same six-month period. I haven't seen Michael's report yet. I can tell you, though, I've seen $6 million spent on TV. Yep. So that's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
So, right? So yeah. That's just what he's put on TV. What else has he done? Mail, radio, everything else. So we shall see. With Evers, I want to know how much of his money came from the State Democratic Party. Remember, finance laws in Wisconsin allow parties to take unlimited donations from donors and then make unlimited contributions to candidates. So how much that $10.1 million came from the party? I mean, it all spends the same.
Right.
But those are details that tell you the story of like how strong their operations were. With Evers, I want to know, did he raise more from individuals than Rebecca Clayfish did? That would be a strength of his operation. Mandela announced Barnes for the Senate raise, $2.1 million raised last week. What I want to know is how much cash on hand does he have? We both know Alex Lazary and Sarah Galuski can spend from their own pocketbooks. Mm-hmm. If Mandela's low cash on hand, at least a little margin for error the last month of this race to respond to any attacks. Nobody's thrown a big swing at him yet politically about anything. If one comes, does he have the resources to respond? We'll see. Galuski, I want to know, did she get a bump on the Dobbs decision? Remember, when the draft decision leaked, she was in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Got a big boost out of that. Did it translate into a fundraising boost? She hasn't announced her numbers yet. Makes me kind of wonder if it did. Lazary, how much more did he put into the race from his own pocket? Because both Lazary and Galuski are putting more money in their own than they're raising for other people. What's going on there? And Tom Nelson, the Allegheny County exec, he's been about $200,000 each quarter. He has struggled to kind of catch fire financially. He doesn't have the personal resources. Mm-hmm. So these are my unanswered questions going forward. We're also watching for Kevin Nicholson. We talked about him last week, right? Why did he drop out? Well, I'm guessing he never raised a whole lot of money. I got a little hint, though, of like the effort on his behalf, because the PAC that was created to support his gov bid got $4.5 million from Dick Uihlein. He's an Illinois businessman, GOP mega donor, put in three donations over like a three-month period, spent $4.3 million plus on TV. I'm guessing that was most of the TV that Kevin Nicholson got to run. Interesting side note. Dick Uihlein's wife, Liz, also a GOP mega donor, also an Illinois business person, gave a six-figure donation to the PAC supporting Rebecca Clayfish's campaign.
Split
household. So I'm watching to see that PAC's filing to see how much Liz gave since the beginning of the year to that PAC. So just a little intrigue as I geek out this weekend with finance reports.
Oh, I'm sure you will, JR. And I will be far, far away. So also, we just wanted to preview next Sunday, TMJ News and Marquette University is going to co-host a televised debate with the Democratic U.S. Senate candidates. It will be on Sunday at 6 p.m. in Milwaukee. Kind of just want to talk about, you know, Chair, we've only really seen Tom Nelson really target Alex Lazary mm-hmm. for his ties to the Bucks. He's kind of on leave right now from his position from the Milwaukee Bucks. But, you know, are we going to start seeing them start taking shots? I think we've talked about it here on the show before. Mandela Barnes is the one leading in the polls. Lazary made a little bit of movement in the latest Marquette University Law School poll. So that's kind of something that I think both of us are going to keep our eyes on.
So Sunday's debate also has Stephen Olicara. He qualified recently for that debate. So there'll be five people on stage.
People.
Again, let me take a shot at Mandela. There are issues there to bring up. Being delinquent on paying his taxes, which, you know, he was late. He got him in, says he was campaigning and was late. Issues like that, comments he's made about defund ICE, or the T-shirt he's holding up, you know, defund ICE, mm-hmm. or comments he made about that was from almost a year ago now that kind of leaked on social media over July 4th weekend about the awful founding of our country talking about slavery. These are things that can really come into play in a general election. Will a Democrat use those things against Mandela in the debate, knowing if he or she does, it could boomerang back on you? Will they all play nice? the entire time on Sunday. We shall see. We also have coming up, WISA just announced they're doing debates. So we have the Democrats for U.S. Senate this Sunday, Republicans for governor next Sunday. Then we have August 1st and 2nd town hall meetings with WISN for both the U.S. Senate candidates and the GOP Gov candidates. A little different, you know, taking questions from the audience, how they respond, that kind of stuff. But these things, in my experience with a debate, what you're watching is, if somebody make a mistake so bad, ends up in a TV ad. Most people aren't like us. They're not going to watch the debates, no offense to geeks like us, but they are going to spend their Sunday night doing something else. It's a summer evening. They got other things on their agenda. So if you make a mistake, the question is, does it end up in a TV ad? That's where you really do damage in a debate often. Or is there a viral moment that ends up on social media reverberating, you know, time and time again, and then gets in the TV ad? That's what I'm kind of watching for with these things.
Right. And with the governor town hall, too. We haven't seen Tim Michaels in that setting before. It's not a debate, like you said. It's more taking questions from the audience. But that will be something that I'm sure we'll kind of preview next week, because it'll be in 2 weeks Sunday. Yep. We'll see Tim Michaels in the flesh, kind of really going head-to-head with Rebecca Clayfish. Tim Rantham will also be there as well. And I believe you are also going to be on a panel for a lieutenant governor debate.
Yes,
so we're going to be having a lot of debates going on, of course, because we are very, very close to the primary election.
Back-to-back Wednesday and Thursday, the Democrats one day, Republicans the other day. So
it's good. We'll have a lot to, I guess, go over next week. All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a good one.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.